Blog Talk Radio.
Only you have made my bad days turn good. You was the only one that put a smile on my face. You was the one that I knew I can always come to when I was down. And no, I saw you in the crib. I'll have a smile again. I thank Most High for you, because without you, I don't know what I would do. Man, I feel good just to be a father. Be a father, man, it's no better feeling in the world. And I have to do my part to make sure that you have a part. I know that to be true. I love you. I thank Most High for you every day that you're mine.
For my son.
You gotta like glide, man. You gotta like glide through it, because there's a lot of ills going on in the world, man. And you'll be having a choice, though. You know what I mean? And what you really want to do. If you want to go that route or not.
SOC Radio. I'm your host, Tony Mix. Welcome to tonight's 90-minute broadcast. Tonight we have a special guest, but before I get to that, let me introduce my co-host for tonight, and that is Sister Amunette. It's my partner in crime. She helps make it happen here on EIE SOC Radio. Thank God for her. Because there's no me without her, you know, because this is how we do it. This is a we thing, not a me thing. Tonight, we're having a special guest on. I'm going to give you a little bit about our guest in just a moment, but I want to welcome all my listeners. I want to also welcome those that are in the chat room. Feel free to leave your comments, and I'll try to read some of them back on the air or some of your questions. And do me a favor, please type in your name so I'll know who's in the chat room, because in the chat room you come up as a guest and sometimes your name does not come up. So just say hello and tell us your name. Also, our call-in number tonight is 424-258-9271. Press 1. I know you're in the queue, and I'll bring you in on tonight's conversation. If you do not want to speak, do not press 1, because if you press 1, you'll come up on the board, and I will see you. Tonight's guest is someone who I've met just recently. Let me tell you a little bit about the brother. But first, let me tell you the title of our show, and that is Mentoring Our Youth and Preventing Crime and Incarceration. Our guest for tonight is Brother Yusuf Bunchy Shakur.
Shakur.
Let me give you a little background about him. He's a father, he's an activist, he's an entrepreneur, mentor, speaker, author, educator, and organizer. Yusuf is on a journey to capture and condition and nurture the minds of our youth and community. And for that, he should be honored as a trailblazer, making a positive difference, Detroit, and shaping the renaissance of our region. In 2012, he was voted a finalist for the Steve Harvey's Hoodie Awards Best Community Leader by communities across the country because of his hard work and dedication of being an agent of change. Okay, I'm going to ask that when you do call in, because as I'm speaking, I'm seeing the lines are filling up. So if you get a chance to get on, please be brief as possible, because I want to give everybody a chance to ask a question or make a comment, and we need to share the time. We're only on for 90 minutes, so please be mindful of that. Is there anything that I've left out? Pretty much no. Again, I'm your host. My co-host is Sister Amunet. And we're going to get right at this right away, because I really want to hear from this brother. So let me just welcome Brother Yusuf Bunchy Shakur. Good evening, brother. Can you hear me?
Good evening. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's a pleasure to have you
on. Welcome. Thank you. Thank you. We are honored, like I was telling you earlier, sir. Just very, very, very honored to have you here. I'm touched. I'm moved, and I'm also inspired by your story and by your service. So we just want to roll with it tonight and let you just have the platform to discuss your thoughts, your plans, your goals, your ideas, any strategies that you think would be helpful to the topic, because we know that you're the expert on it, and we want you to just flow tonight. You are amongst family, and we want you to flow. That's it. Flow as spirit and the ancestors push you to flow. I will ask questions.
Like,
I want you to flow.
Okay, well, sounds like a plan then. Let's cook this dinner.
There you go.
That's right.
There you go. All right, so I'm going to start first and foremost, again, welcoming you most definitely to the show. Your name, when I first saw you online and really got, informed about your work and what you do, the name was the first thing that stood out to me because it's so powerful. The three names that you've chosen. First of all, when I hear Yusuf, I think of Yusuf Hawkins, because that was the first Yusuf that I ever became aware of. When I think Bunchy,
right.
I think Bunchy Carter of the Black Panther Party, one of the first martyrs to go down, the founder of the Southern California Black Panther Party chapter, who was gunned down in 1969. And then when I hear Shakur, many things come into my mind. I think of Asada. I think of Tupac. I think of the whole Shakur clan and Afeni in there.
Right.
So tell me a little bit about the genesis of your name, Yusuf Bunchy Shakur.
Well, to kind of help your audience get a feel for me. I was born with the name Joseph Lee Ruffin. So part of my transformation in prison, I wanted a name to be able to recognize my mission and my journey. So every time I heard that, I was compelled to meet that obligation. So Joseph and Yusuf, as we all know, it's the same name. It's just pronounced different in different languages. So I kept that name in honor of my mother, who named me in honor of my grandfather. Bunchy, as you mentioned, was in honor of Al Prentice, Bunchy Carter. And yet, some of us, and particularly folks our age, we tend to, our egos become so big as if we want to be the architects of the struggle, as if other folks' shoulders that we don't stand on. So for myself, looking at Bunchy, my life mirrored his life and numerous other folks, but particular to him, me coming out of a gang, street organized culture here in the city of Detroit, him going to prison, redeeming, transforming his life, having a vehicle such as the Black Panther Party to be able to act out that redemption and getting back in the community, being an organizer, an activist, as a revolutionary. I'm like, damn, that's me. And, Shakur, beside what the name means itself, thankful to God, as well as upholding the whole Shakur clan. So my whole name means honorable soldier, thankful to God. But also something significant, too, as you identified, really putting the bed of that East Coast, West Coast beef, or supposedly beef between the party. To me, we all children of the party, the Garveyite, Nate Islam, any of us who are doing this movement, because all those have influence or should influence us, because they've done it before we did. Whether you agree with everything, the fact that they've been out here and they've made some type of contribution.
That's right. That's right. And I thank you so much for sharing that and breaking the science down of the name and explaining that, it's important that we pay homage and study the past, because that's the way we're going to know how to pursue and navigate the future. So I'm so thankful for you breaking that down. But I want to also mention that our special guest tonight is also an author. He's the author of the Yusuf Bunchy Shakur Stories, Detroit Native Son, Redemptive Soul, which is his book, The Window to My Soul, and the curriculum guide, the other person that goes with it, Scribes of Redemption. And the latest, newest release is Redemptive Soul, yes, correct?
Yes, correct.
You want to tell me a little bit about Redemptive Soul?
So what Redemptive Soul is basically a combination of my first and my second book, which talked about The Window to My Soul, my transformation from a Zone A thug to a father and freedom fighter. And my second book, which I written, published about a year ago, My Soul Looks Back, Life After Incarceration. So again, on the understanding that the society and how business works in creating product, I took both those products and made it one. So it's the reader. So say if you're interested in looking at my whole life up to where I'm at now, you can read that. But if you want to look at my life in segments, as far as the gang, the relationship between me and my mother, growing up in my community, in prison, how I diagnosed those problems and bring forth some concrete solutions, then you have that book, which is The Window to My Soul, and then you have My Soul Looks Back, which breaks down post-prison, helps you understand why do former prisoners, the recidivism rate is so high. Coming back home to my community where I felt alienated from, but to stand before you now as a college graduate, ran and operated a business, do much community work, but also helping people understand, because, again, we look at folks who find themselves in the limelight, and we don't look at the darkness that they came out of, and some of us are still in. Even though we might be in the limelight, but we're still going through some struggles and whatnot, and people assume as if it happened overnight. It's about commitment, sacrifice, commitment, more sacrifice to get to this position and not giving up.
That's right. That's right. And I thank you for bringing that up, because that growth process is so important. What I want you to do is take us from the past to the present. I want to hear about the evolution of Yusuf Bunchy Shakur.
All right. So by the age 13, I had co-founded a gang here in the city of Detroit called Zone 8 with some of my childhood friends. Also, by the age 13, I had been kicked out of every Detroit public schools. I was a badass. And, you know, my mother was just, like, pulling my hair out, beating my ass, doing whatever she had to do to try to protect me from ultimately would be myself. So by the age 15, my mother made me a ward of the state because of the things that I was getting into. And she saw something I didn't see, which was that I was possibly going, I was traveling this road of self-destruction. And on her watch, she was saying, no, this won't happen. So only folks that she could turn to for help with was the system. So she made me a ward of the state. But also part of doing those early years or my adolescent years, me and my mother had this internal struggle because I was addicted to the streets and she was addicted to alcoholism.
Early
part of my life, when she would discipline me, it would be after she had been drinking. So those discipline turned into beatings and very excessive. And so as I was absorbing all that anger and that hurt and that beating, I had to release it. And I released it on teachers, my peers, and the streets became a vehicle to release that aggression. And so when I came home from the training school after being there for maybe a year and a half, I came home with a false hope, false pretense, because I didn't have knowledge itself, which would have allowed me to look at those internal dynamics that of low self-esteem, of self-hatred that was guiding my decisions and my choices. But I was tired, though. I'm tired of gang-banging. I was tired of breaking my mother's heart. So I roll in this one school, and I'm doing pretty good. And I had this teacher who noticed me. He said, man, what do you think about going to college? And I said, man, I'd love to go to college. He was like, I'm going to help you go to college. But when I went home that night and I really thought about that conversation, it scared the hell out of me because I realized I didn't know what college was, even though right around the corner from my neighborhood was one of the most prestigious colleges in the state of Michigan, Wayne State University. But I didn't see myself going to that school, didn't know how I could utilize that information that was at my doorstep. And I panicked because I wanted to do good, but I didn't know how to do good. So I tried to kill myself because I didn't want to go back to the streets either. So I was unsuccessful in doing that. And I went back to the streets.
Did you feel trapped? Is that why you wanted to kill yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I felt trapped because I didn't, for me mentally, I didn't know how to go into that next dimension. Kind of like a car, you go into that next gear. I didn't know how I was at a roadblock and I didn't know how to go over it, under it, and I just fell in. I caved in, and I wanted to quit. I was tired.
Right.
So I ended up. Getting back involved in the streets, gangbanging, and that led me to go to prison for a crime I didn't do, which was a gang-related crime, which I was guilty of being in the gang, but not that crime per se. And this is where my prison story changes from a lot of guys who go to prison, or most guys, where in prison I met my father for the first time. The uniqueness about that, when I say I met my father for the first time, what I mean by that is because I knew of him prior to going to prison. I knew him as a sperm donator. I knew him as the guy who said, I'm going to do this and do that, and don't do a damn thing. But as a father, that's who I met. And we met initially.
You met your father.
Yes. And we met through letters. I was there in prison maybe about 2 months. I'm in and out the hole, fighting. I'm still acting and behaving as if I'm on the streets. I think about my seventh time in the hole. I'm lonely. I'm angry. I'm frustrated, and all type of questions going through my head. And I don't have the answers. I know I can't ask my homeboys because they in the same predicament of underdevelopment that I'm in.
Exactly.
So I realized, let me write my father. I ain't got nothing to lose. Maybe something can come out of it. And that was the best decision I had made in my life.
Let me just ask you this. When was the last time that you had seen him physically?
Physically,
at that point.
It may have been about 4 years. And my grandmother had took me to go visit him, and that conversation went like this. He asked me and my younger brothers what all we wanted to be, and I told him I wanted to be the biggest dope dealer in the city of Detroit.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
And so as he began to preach to me and teach to me, I began to tune him out because, you know, he's not my father. You know, the streets are my father. Like the OGs, these are my father. These are guys who I wanted to be like.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Father, what was your father doing at the time? What was he doing at the time? Was he, in terms of for a living, was he working? Was he functioning in society? Is there a reason why there was a level of disrespect at that point or estrangement?
I mean, the level of disrespect was really centered around there was no relationship. He was in prison. When that conversation had took place,
mm-hmm.
The little times that I had been around him, I don't know what his activity was as far as being a working man, et cetera. I know he was definitely involved in the streets on some level. I don't know to what extent.
Mm-hmm.
He also, and when I was 10, when my mother broke the news to me that he was in prison, it never really occurred to me why he was in prison or wanting to know why.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely a void was in my life because even though we had never had a personal relationship, I had an indirect personal relationship because everywhere I went, people would say, you act just like your daddy. Meaning,
right, I was just going to ask you that. Did you see the parallel between your life and his life, and then did that spark you to say, I don't think I want this?
Well, I didn't see it then. What that I did see, because you know, I grew up in a household like many black boys. You ain't shit. You act just like your daddy. You look like mm-hmm. him. So hearing those negative things about my father, and the only positive thing I did hear was he was a fighter. You fight just like him. You get in trouble. I embraced that. So that was a way of knowing my daddy. That was a way of loving my daddy without having him in my life to nurture me to love him. And the streets began to cultivate that negativity that was being fostered in me because of the images of what my father had left with other people.
Mm. Mm.
So by the time I get to prison, and again, and I'm glad you kind of helping shape the narrative. And so when I finally write him that letter and show you my ignorance, like it never dawned on me, like he didn't know at that time either I was dead or in prison or anything. And so when the letter slid up under his door, it never occurred to me he possibly would feel disappointed, angry, sad because of like, damn, my son has followed me to this hellhole. Not only followed me to this hellhole, there's a possibility that he can get stabbed. There's a possibility that he can get raped. There's a possibility that my son could catch another case for sitting down and spend the rest of his life. You know, none of these things was part of my calculation because I didn't understand the dynamics of what was going on. And so when he wrote me back, it was so much that was jumping off at the letter that I didn't comprehend because I was so street and really illiterate.
Mm-hmm,
but what
mm-hmm,
I did comprehend
mm-hmm.
early on was the love, the warmth, the protection, all the things that I yearned for, that I wanted, and more importantly, I needed. Because when I went to prison, I was 19 years old, just turned 19. But more likely, I was probably 13 in my mind. So here, that little boy that always wanted his father, the opportunity now was to begin, and unfortunately was in prison. And so we built a relationship through letters, and here's a funny part to the story. When he writes me back in that first letter, he says, and this is like a 6-7-page letter, and at the end it says, T.S., you misspelled knowledge, you misspelled religion, and some other words. And he's like, when Malcolm was in prison, you know, he read the dictionary. If you don't have one, you need to get one. And I didn't take offense to what he said because I felt what he was saying was for the best interest of me. So we would end up being at the same prison a year later. But prior to us getting there, those letters was the most consistent in my life that I heard something positive from a black man to me as a black boy that was growing, that should have been growing to be a strong black man. So by the time I got to him, those letters had become was like the building blocks of the foundation. So he was telling me and conveying to me who he was and how he acted in the sense of exercising, eating healthy, reading, being knowledgeable. And so when I saw those things, because one, you know, coming from the streets, you know, one thing we consistently gravitate and respect is real. And here was my father. He was every sense of what it meant to be real in an honorable way. And that was just very welcoming to see. There was no bullshit. One thing that he had told me, that for man to know, man has to be about what he know. And that was like very powerful for me at the time, because being in prison, you got so many guys, you know, kind of like being on Facebook. You know, everybody's an activist. Everybody's a revolutionary.
Tell everybody. That's right.
Everybody's a religious type of guy. But what I was able to do, when my father said, for man to know, he has to be about what he knows, is basically, if your action is not in accord with your words, then you full of crap. And they helped me navigate through that. And when we were together, I just took the blueprint that he had developed and went inside myself and began to resurrect and rebuild myself from the inside out. So I began to read and study and work out and exercise. And that, before you know it, my transformation and my redemption had began to take root and grow. And we spent like 6 months together.
He played catch up in those 6 months. It was like he was playing catch up with being your father.
Oh yeah, yeah, he did. He did. Not only playing my being my father, but he was also my brother. He was my friend. Yeah. Our relationship, I related to Malcolm and Elijah relationship, because Malcolm, and I think part of the story of Malcolm and Elijah, Elijah was really like his father. That's when Malcolm held him on such high esteem. And so when Elijah kind of disappointed him, he's like, damn, Dad, why not like that? But the difference in our relationship was, not only was he my father, but he was my comrade too. He was my friend. So it allowed for me and him to have differences. Now, even though I was trying to be like him, but also I started to be my own man in my own development. And he never felt like threatened, like, no, you gotta do it the way I do it. You gotta say it the way I say it. And so as much as he was teaching me, and as I was learning, I began to be the teacher in the relationship as well. But he was always the primary teacher. And that was and that was good part of my growth and my development, because we like at early part I was a Muslim. And then I stopped being a Muslim for my own personal reason. My father
that seems to be the first step to consciousness. Let's be a Muslim. That was like the 90s. You know what I mean? Like, let's be a Muslim.
Yeah. And, you know, especially in prison. I joined a religious organization. That was part of the prerequisite. And he maintained, he still maintains to this day, of being a Muslim. And I respect his decision. And he respect my decision on not being a Muslim. And we disagree on some things, but again, we have a healthy relationship, and you know, God being the best planner, 5 years or 6 years later, he would put us on another prison yard. And this time I'm close to going home, and we there together like 2 days, and we're working out, we're exercising. And so when I get the call that I'm transferring, he walks me up to the gate, and he has tears in his eyes, and he looks at me, and he tells me that they can keep the lion caged, but the cub must go free. And when the cub goes free, part of the lion goes with him. And so even though my father's still in prison, it touches me. It was a beautiful moment. It was just powerful, because again, if you know my father, he also ended up catching another case in prison. Guy falsely lied on him. So his communication with other guys is limited. I mean, he's a strange disciplinary type guy. He's militant, so he don't communicate. So when guys saw us walking together, working out, they didn't know like we was father and son. A couple did, but everybody else didn't know. So they was like, you know, why about Rudy hanging with this young dude? You know, they probably learned later on, but it was just important to build that relationship. It was important to recognize the power of God and the role that he played, and that I needed that relationship to change my life. Like, I get young guys asking me all the time, like, if you hadn't met your father, where would you be? And I said, I'd probably still be in prison for the rest of my life, or possibly dead.
So I ended up serving 9 years total. Was that what sparked you initially to what I'm trying to find the catalyst. Was this the beginning? Was this the catalyst to spark you into having a mission? When did you find your mission and your calling? When did it happen?
I mean, I thought it happened in the early part of that the initial relationship with me and my father. But began mm-hmm. to gain a sense of knowledge of self, you know, recognizing being a descendant of great African men and women, also understanding the struggles here in Black America, you know, the many sacrifices, the many assassinations, through COINTELPRO, like, it's still a struggle. You know, we didn't win. We got our butt
right.
kicked. And, you know, here I was in 2019 and 21, and I remember reading the book Black Women and White America, and it was a very powerful book for me at the time, that I cried myself to sleep that night because I, as I read it and I pondered, like, if I had died at 21, my legacy would have been a gang member, which would have been mm-hmm. a disgrace to mm-hmm. our overall legacy of providing something positive. So my legacy of my mission began to evolve out of my father, what he did for me. So now I was sent out to do the same thing for other guys, you know, help them
right.
gain a sense of self, of knowledge, of taking this negative and turning it into a positive. Like, he was, you know, like, prison was nothing but a preparation ground to prepare yourself mm-hmm. to be better, to go
mm-hmm.
home, to be a community protector versus being a community predator. So that's where the
okay.
mission began initially, and it just evolved and developed as I began to continue to grow a political consciousness and further study.
Got it. Now, break it down for me. Formerly incarcerated and convicted people's movement. Give me the genesis. Give me the vision. Give me the workings. Go ahead.
Formerly incarcerated and convicted people's movement is a collaboration of formerly incarcerated men and women, as well as convicted men and women across the country. Many of us who have been doing this work of advocating on behalf of our oppressed community long before Michelle Alexander came out with the new Jim Crow and numerous other folks who began to get a lot of the shine, which I think that they've helped mm-hmm. elevate some of the things that you had. Those of us who have been most impacted by mass incarceration, which is a reflection of Black oppression,
right.
came together. We first came together in Alabama, and maybe about 4 or 5 years ago. And at that
mm-hmm.
at that convening, we decided to further get back together, and we recognized that we didn't have a movement, and part of that movement was saying we wanted to speak in our own voices, and we're tired of having nonprofit church folks, you know, speaking on behalf of us in regards to recidivism, in regards to mass incarceration, you know, these academic folks. And I think, you know, some of them can be great allies, but they cannot lead our movement to social change to impact that. So that's where that came from, through organizations such All of Us and None, who initiated the Ban the Box policy that has swept across America, where we're talking about the open discrimination of men and women who come out of prison that can't get jobs because you ask that question of, have you ever been convicted? Can't get housing because they ask that question, have you ever been convicted? Can't get into college because that same question. So, again, you know, these same policies that America has continued to reshape of stagnating us. You know, we're working to liberate ourselves to begin to organize, and we still got a long way to go, but we're definitely taking those steps.
Okay, excellent. And there's a statistic out, and I don't know if you can shed some light on this. And then what we're going to do is we're going to I'm going to go back to Brother Tony and let him basically figure out what's going on with the phone lines and anybody that wants to call in and perhaps ask you some questions or make some comments. Okay, but my question is statistically, are there more Black men in prison than there were in slavery? Is that factual?
I believe that came from Michelle Alexander. She wrote
right.
that in her book. I don't know the numbers per se, but I mean, for myself being in prison, it definitely. I mean, if it's factual or not, it doesn't. I wouldn't even want to get in that argument. What I do know is factual. When I walked out my prison cell, whether it was, I was in my housing unit or I was on the yard, I saw nothing but a sea of black men. Now, I know that was factual. Whatever prison I went to. And so, I'm saying that to say, whether it's factual or not, the fact is that we have populated these prisons in numbers that are crazy when you look at the overall population of black people, which we're close to between 12% and 13% of the overall population here in the United States of America. So those are crazy numbers. Even and I would even interject the question that we find ourselves arguing about, are there more black men in prison than in college? And probably that's false. But the fact of the matter, to me, even if we're having that conversation, that's alarming. There's something wrong. That we think that more black men are in prison. Other than we're lacking somewhere and we need to be improving and doing some other things.
Well, I've heard statistically that there were more black men actually in college or that it's pretty much even and that more and more brothers are going back to college and back to school, such as yourself, for example, my husband, for example. A lot of people are going back. So, we have to, slice and dice between what's fiction and what's fact, between propaganda, media hype, psychological media warfare, and all those other things that can affect us and skew our thinking. So, Tony, are the phones, can we go to the phones now, or?
But before we do, Brother Youssef, again, man, thanks for being on tonight. I'm listening to you, and I got a lot of identification with, you're coming up. I'm sitting here like kind of overwhelmed, listening to it, because it's like it's part of my story I'm hearing, and then when you come into the light, how you come into the light, through pain and misery, and then you get an awakening from the person you least expected to get an awakening from,
right.
You threw God in there, and yes, God is a great God, man, a great God, and also what piece I picked up on, because I just wrote about this recently because I write small blogs, how you getting out there with folks who come from where you've been at, and you going at the young cats with a start where you stand type of interview, like, in other words, overview, like you're telling them, listen, I've been there, I've done that. This is what's going to happen if you do X, Y, Z, or you can choose to keep doing what you're doing and go to the penitentiary like myself or the graveyard, You're the type of brothers that we need. We need brothers that been there, done that. I heard you say about the nonprofits and church and others. Myself, I'm nonprofit. At the same time, I've been there and done that, because like I said, I'm listening to your story. I'm listening to your story, and I can ID. I get it.
Right.
Coming out the box at 13, that's my story. I went away for 2 years at age 13. Okay. Home was a little dysfunctional, so I can ID. And it took cats who had been there, done that, to bring me up out of my mess, and we need more soldiers like yourself, because these are, we are who the youngsters are going to listen to, because everybody, people that's going to school and getting degrees and this and that, that's all good, but it's nothing like that experience of being out there and coming through to the other side and giving it back to them youngsters who are out there where we used to be. There is nothing there's no book, nothing can give that.
All right, and I just want to add some clarity to the points that you're making are so right on, because for me, it shouldn't be an either or. It should, and what I want to make a distinction is the fact that story is more common than we want to realize and recognize, because of the oppression that goes in our community. And some of us who come out of it for the good, we tend to forget. Like, man, I don't want to remember nothing about growing up without my dad. I don't want to remember nothing about having an alcoholic mother, because that pain, as you just acknowledged, has been was so hard, and that we hadn't learned how to deal with it. Like, going back there brings us back to that pain. And so, again, we find ourselves, and so what we do, we find ourselves in either or. You know, the brother that comes from Harvard, you know, you and I come from the penitentiary. We need both, but we can't allow folks to play us against each other, and we have to understand through a strategy of where we what roles that we play. You know, I'm not against nonprofits, because you know, we need allies, but we're against folks just trying to profit off of us and not trying to utilize those institutions to better our community first and foremost.
And I get all of that. I get all of that. As I said, we need more cats like yourself. Believe that.
Okay.
You know, we need more cats like yourself, you know, because there's more identification. You know, you talked about the pain of mom and dad, you know. Youngsters want to know, well, you know, I got that same kind of situation. You know, how you get through that? How did you heal? How did you forgive? You know, these are the things they want to know. Because they don't know. They truly don't know. And we got that to give them. Like, okay, listen. It is a process, but this is how the process begins. You know? Man, I'm going to go to the phone lines and get our first caller, which is Doc out of the West Coast. He said he couldn't stick around long. And let me get him on right now. Good evening, Doc.
Good evening, brother.
Good evening, man.
Good evening,
thanks for
coming
on. Say
a little bit
about Youssef.
Hey, brother Youssef.
Hey, what's going on, bro?
Hey, man, I don't know what to say, man. I wasn't going to stay on for about 15 minutes. You got me going in overtime, burning up the phones. My wife is in there going to be mad at me, but I'm going to blame it on you. So I just want you to go ahead and suck it up, okay?
I appreciate it. Thank you, bro.
Okay, I'm just giving you a heads up. So the next time you can go ahead and say, well, Sister K, I apologize because she'll be on you, but I'm going to go ahead and just blame it on you, you know. man, you said so much. And Sister Amunet, you know, my African queen sister there, you had him going, and you said so many things, but I'm just going to be brief. There's just a couple things I'm going to hit, and I'm going to get off of here because my mind is so I'm spinning at this point in time, and I don't know where to go. But there's just two things that I want to hit. The first thing is. You mentioned the name. One thing that about us is, and being Africans living in America, names are very important to us. First of all, we didn't come here like my name, Edgar Jordan Scott. that name was given to me, and it has meaning. For being here in America, but my African name, I have two African names, and my last African name is Chalo Muthami Ilele. That's what I got when I went back to Africa. And it means a man chosen by God to bring continents together. Has lots of meaning. And we have African names, and you get them, you might get three or four in your lifetime, and they have meaning, and so you get them at different times when you're African, and they have meaning for you, and what's happened by enslavement in coming to America, we were forcibly enslaved. When we came here, and so education becomes real important to us, and we're the only group that things were done to us that wasn't done to other groups of folks. Now, I'm not knocking that. I'm just saying it's a historical fact, and it's things that are done to us that are still done to us that haven't been done to other groups of folks. And so, and I'm not knocking it. I'm not saying we need to hold anger about it. I'm just saying it's a factual thing. But what happens with that is there's some things that happens to you over time, and there's some things that my wife and I call, we have a journey model, and there's some things that we call oppression. And what happens with that is you internalize that oppression, and over time what happens is nobody has to do it to you. You start doing it to yourself, and it becomes internalized. And as you look at internalized oppression, we look at it, we think that we as a people, we've internalized that oppression. And so when I look at that as a group, we have to learn how to work through that. And I look at folks in particular, Africans living in America, and some people get upset with that because that's how I identify myself. I don't call myself an African-American because I don't think there is an African-American. But other people can call themselves whatever they want to. I just don't. And so when I look at Brother Yusuf in your life story, I think I look at that. I've never been to prison. I was blessed not to go, and by that I mean I was around all the things that should have put me there, but I had family members, cousins, that kept me from going there, and blessed to be in martial arts with all of my anger to keep me out of there, and had all of the hostility that should have put me there, but I don't think it's necessary to go there to have that experience to do the things that you need to do. But here's what I do think is necessary. I do think it's necessary to connect with the Brother Shakurs of the world, and for us to connect to have a complete marriage to make this thing work. Because if we don't have this, we're not going to get to these black boys and make them into men. We're in trouble in our environments. And we're going to have to make this thing work. I mean, when I met Brother Tony, it was instant bonding. It was instant bonding. We didn't have to go somewhere for a week, hold hands and sing We Shall Overcome. Brother Tony knows.
I'm sorry, Doc.
Two thugs know where it's biting at. You know what I'm saying? It's things that you know. I grew up on the block. I called one of my friends at home the other day. Brother Tony knows some things that are happening in my life now. I was just blessed not to have to be behind bars. I've been in law enforcement. And so I've given folks a break. And they said, well, Doc, why didn't it ever happen to you? And one of my nicknames was Sneaky Pete. And well, I was just blessed. That's all. But, you know, the thing is, my thing now is, how can I serve you? And my thing is, I'm into service. But I think a college education, yeah, I have a PhD. But when I got my PhD, here's what my wife said. She said, Doc, here's what I want to tell you. You're done. You're not going to be able to make it. And I pulled over, and I said, what are you talking about? Honey, I have a PhD now, a black man with a PhD. She says, you're done. And my wife has red hair and blue eyes. And I said, what do you mean I'm done? She says, you are done. You got a PhD at one of the most racist universities in America, Colorado State University. She says, they are not going to let you play. And that was it. I was done in education. She's exactly right. And when you talk about struggle, I got my PhD in 1994. This is 2014. I was done. So when you're talking about education, people can say, well, you're successful. Well, it depends on how you measure success.
What is success?
Yeah.
You know, what is success? What is success?
Serving others.
You know? There you go.
There you go. I like that, Doc. Yes. Yes.
Serving others. Giving yourself to others. Giving yourself to others.
Right. I got other callers, Doc. I don't mean to cut you short, but I got other callers. I want to take a short break. Before we do take a short break, I just want to say our number is 424-258-9271. Press 1, I know you're in the queue. I'll bring you in. You can speak to Brother Yusuf. Also, the chat room is open. If you can't get in the chat room, you may have to go to the Blog Talk Radio link and sign in via Facebook or Twitter. Our guest tonight is Yusuf Bunchi Shakur. He's a father, activist, entrepreneur, mentor, speaker, author, educator, and organizer. We're going to continue with our discussion tonight and get to hear more from our guest right after a short break. So stand by. Don't go anywhere.
Uh-huh. I know y'all can feel me on this one. Because I'm talking about the ghetto. Well, 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 well. Oh, yeah. I was about 13, as I recall, just a young whippersnapper playing ball, trying to hang out with the homies after dark. We used to slap box until the street lights come on, and I can hear my mama yelling, man, it's time to come on. But being young, you know how hard-headed we was. And I could clearly remember all of the other kids laughing at me, because I used to wear those hand-me-downs. But if only they can see me now. And every now and then I reminisce about it. Well, baby, that's life as well as you know, when you come straight from the ghetto.
Hey, yo, hey, yo.
Oh, yeah.
Give me some of that, give me some of that.
Good old ghetto.
Back as a kid again.
We wore ghetto clothes, dreamed of being ghetto stars, driving our ghetto loads. With a diamond in the back, sunroof top, digging the scene with the gangster lean. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Now I can clearly remember when it was cool to do that hammer dance, and everybody wore those pants. But back then, I just couldn't afford it. Every now and then I reminisce about, but it's all good in the hood, you know, especially when you're from the ghetto.
Hey, yo,
oh,
hey, yo,
all right.
Give me some of that, give me some of that.
Good old
ghetto,
ghetto.
Yeah. Back as a kid again.
Hey, yo,
hey, yo,
hey, yo,
give me some of
to all my homies who I locked up, and all my homies who I passed away. Rest in peace. Ah. Yeah, yeah. From the Goodfellas family to you and yours.
You're listening to EIESOC Radio. I'm your host, Tony Nix, founder and president of Enough is Enough, Save Our Children, based here in Southeast Queens, New York. I'm an activist against gun violence. There's a crisis in America, and that crisis is gun violence. It's the scourge of every urban community across America. Believe it. Our children are dying by their own hands. It's genocide by way of homicide, and we have to get busy to stop more death. Time to show up for life and stop showing up for death, because we show up more for death than we show up for life. Our call-in number tonight is 424-258-9271. Our show is about mentoring our youth and preventing crime and incarceration. My guest for this evening's is Yusef Bunchy Shakur. If you've been listening, please continue to listen. This man has a hell of a story, okay? He has a heck of a background. Once you hear his story and then you hear what he's doing today, it's all I can say is remarkable. It's a miracle. You know, this is what grace and mercy does. You know, I was just saying a moment ago that many are called, but they're only a chosen few. And Brother Yusef is one of the chosen few. I'm going to go back to the phone lines. I'm going to get this one sister, and then we're going to get back to Brother Yusef. And my next caller is Sister Diane. Good evening, Sister Diane. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Welcome to tonight's discussion, sis. Do you have a comment or a question?
Yeah, I have a question. My question is,
sure.
I'd like to know why. It may sound like a dumb question, but I really don't think it is. I mean, we have these young brothers out here that, you know, they go to jail, they come out, they stay maybe 2-3 months, and they right back in there. I mean, like 5 more times. I mean, and they come out and do the same thing to get them right back up in there. I mean, like their second home, or what?
You want to answer that,
Yusef? Yeah, I definitely answer that. But, I mean, it's simple in the context, first of all, that this is by design for that revolving door. Here, you know, when you look at my life, it was a reflection of my father's life, of going to prison. I went to prison. But also, once you get there, we have to look at, too, What is taking place? Many of us have been conditioned into misbelieving as if rehabilitation is taking place in prison. It's not. We have been warehoused. The rehabilitation that I occurred for me in prison is a direct result of my father. If it was left up to prison, I still would be a gangbanger. I still would be selling dope. Prison is not set up to address those issues that many of us find ourselves in. And the reality, a lot of us who come out of those situations, we want to not go back and sell dope. We want to go home and be fathers, but we find ourselves in tough situations. Do I go and don't eat? And when my homie's on the corner, you know, looking good? Because, again, we have to look at, you know, how is the drugs getting in our community? How is the guns getting in our community when we don't own the boats, we don't own the plants? As Tony identified, you know, this is part of a genocide plot, but it comes out of genocide. So the deliberate destruction of our minds, which allows us to destroy our bodies. So we have, in asking that question, we ask, what are we doing? I mean, and the more we ask, what are we doing? Because there's enough blame to go in our community. But we need to do more. And like, for part of my education and getting my mission, I had to learn to understand, like, I was an African warrior. And that's our warrior class that's incarcerated. And if we don't have a warrior class to protect our communities, protect our mothers, our women and our daughters and our sons, we're in trouble. And we have to provide our young boys who are growing to be men with that education of being obligated and committed to our community.
Right.
Mm. Can I add just a little piece?
Mm-hmm.
This is Diane. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, I wanted to add a little piece to that, you know. You got to look at the mindset of when they went in, okay? It's pretty obvious they didn't have any critical thinking skills when they went in. They didn't get any while they were in there, okay? So when they got out, it was still that reckless mindset they had.
I don't know
before.
Because I don't know. Let's touch about. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, if you don't have anything other to work with than what you've been working with, what you going to do? You're going to do the same old thing.
Of course. I mean, that's just natural. But, I mean, I know this one particular person. I mean, they started out with the right frame mind the last time when they came out, okay? And, I mean, for 6 months. But to me, it's like 6 months when they were home, they were just sitting there stewing up how to go back and do what they were doing. I mean, all the right tools and everything was thrown to this particular person. I mean, this next thing you know, I read in the papers about some indictment, got busted, all this stuff. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, but since 13, this particular person been like that.
And Diane,
you know,
I'm going to drop this on you. Diane, if I may just interject. Sometimes the prison system becomes all that some brothers know. Fortunately, the safest place for them to be.
Right.
In society. That is where they know that they are going to get clothing, food, shelter, and things provided on a regular basis. It becomes it gives them a sense of normalcy. As dysfunctional as it may be to the rest of society, it gives them a sense of normalcy. That's become their norm. Prison becomes their norm. And that's what they know.
I see that. I see that now. I really do. And it's sad, though, because a person has potentials, you know, and I don't know. Very sad.
Well, all our troubled youth and young adults have potential, okay? Mm-hmm. You can lead them to it. You can lead them in the right direction. But, you know, like that old saying said, you know, goes, you know, you can take a horse to water, but a horse got to be thirsty. Horse ain't thirsty, he ain't going to drink. And that's what goes on with our youth. You know, are they thirsty for change? You got to be thirsty. You got to want something different. You got to be, somebody got to enlighten you and make you aware of the fact that you have choices, okay?
Yes.
And so brothers like Brother Youssef here, that's what he's doing. He's letting these young cats know, hold up, you got a choice, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be easy at the same time. You still have a choice. See, what's happening a lot of times is, what's happening today is our youth have been fed this lie about there are no other choices other than what they are doing on the block. And that's a lie. And we need to promote.
You're right, because you
have
a choice. Whatever choice you make, yes.
Exactly. We have to be clear too. I mean, choices become a reality out of awareness. And if you don't have awareness, then how can you really make a proper choice, which should be centered around development, proper development? You know, like for myself, I use the analogy where quite across the street from my house, there may be an opportunity to do something, but because of the limit of knowledge that I have and the limit of my social skills traps me of not walking across the street to get that resource. So I'm like, fuck that, because it doesn't fit in my world. And that, again, that's part of dissecting that mindset And it's not necessarily about young folks or adults or, oh, it's about, we're all suffering from it on some level. And as the brother who called in earlier, we're talking about internalized oppression. And I have a film on Detroit Native Son, and I talk about, like, when I first came home, you know, Yusef, Bunchy Shakur, read all these books, people like, well, what up, nigga? You know, what up, JoJo? That's what they was looking for. They didn't care that I changed my name. I've been home 13 years, and since I've been home, I've been able to build up respect, been able to build up trust because my reputation of who I used to be preceded me. I mean, cats had bets. He's going to be back quick in 6 months. Okay? And so it's easy for us to say what we would do, but we ain't in those shoes. Like when I first came home, there was a female that lied on me and said, I jumped on her because I didn't want to be in a relationship with her. And they sent me back, and I went home 30 days. But prior to me coming home, I'm like, I'm seeing guys coming back and forth. I'm like, man, you crazy, man. I would never jeopardize my freedom. But I wasn't in their shoes. I don't know what really happened. We window shopping, you know, I mean, cats coming home, and we don't really know what's going on in their households. You know, ain't no foundation. You know, I mean, can you imagine coming home after 12 years and you don't even know how to catch the bus no more? You don't even know how to drive a car? You know, you're coming home, to your, even though it's where you grew up, but the little homies, they're the big homies now. They're looking at you like,
right, you are out of society.
They're ready to catch a body because that's gonna go on their resume. The Matisse status. I mean, all these internal dynamics that we don't really look at because some of us not in that world that we really have to put in perspective. Like for myself, you know, I've been home 13 years, but the work that I'm doing now has propelled me to do some things because I still suffer from some of that institutionalization of not knowing how to communicate, of messing up in relationships and things. But because of the work that I do, it forces me to deal with those challenges.
God bless.
Well, thank you, Sister Diane. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling.
Sister, I'm Eunette. Okay, Eunette. All right. Thank you, guys.
Good night. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Before we go to our next caller, Brother Yusef, man, you just hit it about how you've gotten better and coping. I worked in a state penitentiary. I was a behavior modification counselor, okay? I got this job based on who I am, you know, where I came from. And I'm working with convicts. You know, these convicts, the folks you just mentioned, you know, they've been down a dime or better. And simple stuff like a Metro card for mass transportation is puzzling, okay? When you let a cat out after being down, I would say a dime or more, it's like leaving him on another planet because a whole lot of stuff done changed, okay? That corner he was running, he ain't running no more unless he really, really had it like that. But on average, nobody really had it like that. And like you said, the little cats now, they the big cats, and they holding the block down. And you're right. They got to add. Some of them got attitudes. They got that anger in them, and they're gonna use you as an example, you know, for that street rep, as you mentioned. But what helped me in my journey in life is by helping cats in the penitentiary. It helped me, I mean, it built me in a way that you know. It's really hard to explain. I remember I was telling a friend of mine, I said, man, I'm in here helping cats learn how to get out and stay out and live with a better mindset. And I remember he told me, he said, doing that job is helping you more than it's helping them. Because you're developing into the man you're supposed to be. You know, and he was absolutely right. He was absolutely right. You know, it seems the more I help other folk, you know, the better I get. with you know, my little issues that I have, you know, and things that I can let go of, you know. The blessing in doing what we do, Brother Youssef, man, those who are not in it, I guess they don't really know. Mm-hmm. But there's a blessing in there because it helps you to heal. It helps you to heal. Mm-hmm. It helps you, you know, as you're looking at youngsters, you know, you see you and where you used to be and where you're at now, you know, and wow, what a blessing. What a blessing. And to be able to give your experience, you know, and your strength and your hope, this is what's needed. This is what's needed. And we need it for more men like yourself, because there's a lot of us. There's a lot of us, okay, who can step up and reach out to these youth and help keep them out of the penitentiary, help keep them off the block, you know, teach them stuff like critical thinking. Teach them stuff about humility, you know. Teach them stuff about healing and forgiveness. I mean, you got to spoon feed it to them, but it can be done. You know, that's what was done for me. You know, I got it little by little. You know, and then, you know, I got tough love sometimes, and sometimes I got a whole lot of understanding. But when that tough love needs to kick in, it kicked in. And they didn't care about how I felt because they was trying to help me. You know, so that was the blessing in that. I'm going to go to my next call, and this is Sister Debbie. Good evening, Debbie. Can you hear me? Hello?
Hello?
Debbie, are you on the line? Yes. You're on the air. Say hello to Brother Youssef.
Hi, Brother Youssef. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing, Debbie?
I'm doing good. Now, I have a question. Matter of fact, Sister Diane, she's the one that put me onto this. We actually live around the corner from each other in different neighborhoods, and I understand where she was coming from when she was talking about that particular young man, because we visualize a lot of the things that go on around here because we live in the same community. Now, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, a young man that I know that was a neighbor of a friend of mine, we used to sit on the stoop, laugh, blah, blah, blah. He actually was involved in gunning down a delivery guy that he killed. I just want to know how these young men get brainwashed into joining a group, a gang, that's up to no good. They premeditating ahead of time, don't know what they're doing, yet commit the crime without no remorse, then go back home to get caught. It's like, to me, he wants to get caught. This is a young man that I knew. I'm a bus driver. Take these people on the bus all the time. Smile, how you doing? He didn't seem abnormal. Nothing seemed wrong. But yet, he committed this hideous crime, and now he's going to jail. How will he be facilitated? How will he come out years from now? Being older, because he's only 17, I know they're not letting this young man out no time soon. So he went in this with rage. I don't, like you said, may have started from home. We don't know. But I know from sitting on a stoop, him helping, doing certain things, and then when I found out it was him, I was like, I was sitting next to him. I was talking to him. Really? How does one get brainwashed into doing something like this? What was he reaching out for?
Well, first of all, we have to look at that. I mean, many of us are living a double life, and I lived it better than a lot. Where, because I was, you know, raised by my grandmother and my mother to say yes, no, be nice, and but also I was raised by the streets. So when I wasn't around those folks that demanded that type of behavior out of me, it began to deteriorate. So the more of the streets. Mentality, when you talk about brainwashed, it's not necessarily being brainwashed, it's a conditioning. It's a schooling, an education. It's anti-us, anti-humanity, and things of that nature. So when you look at, like, the crime that these guys or myself committed, we first have to look at the crime that's been committed against them. As far as, because you're talking about a warped human being, a warped mind, a warped spirit, to be able to go commit murder, to be able to go commit rape, and things that, that we, the atrocities that we couldn't even comprehend. So when you say, like, damn, I just had lunch with him, or I just, you know, he was in my car. You know, like right here in Detroit, about a week ago, a bunch of young brothers had beat this white guy real bad. And some sister came out of nowhere and was like, stop, y'all can't keep doing this. And the brothers stopped. But everybody's saying they're savages because of the actual act. But it shows that it wasn't too much of a savage. They responded to her passion. They responded to her motherly love. And that's the issue. We're not having enough of us. And so when you say, why do they join gangs? They join gangs. I mean, first of all, there's nothing wrong with gangs. There's something wrong with the behavior of gangs. Because we all got a gang of folks that we hang with. And we have to make a distinction.
Yeah.
Huh?
Well, I think we call them cliques. I think, you know, I understand what you're saying as far as gang, but these gangs are violent. I have sisters that I hang with. I don't consider them my gang buddies. It's just a clique of sisters that I hang with. But
I mean,
that's another level.
Right. But I mean, at the end of that, that's a play on words. I mean, if any time that you will more than two people, that's a gang. That's a clique. However you want to describe it, my point of it is we associate with those we're most familiar with. The difference is the mindset. If we change the mindset of those young men of being Crips, they become gardeners. They become janitors. And we have to create outlets to be able to help them see themselves differently than gangs. You know, because what happens is it becomes a wild, wild west. So in that wild, wild west is wolves raising baby wolves to be wolves. And why wouldn't you expect them to behave like wolves?
There you go.
Wow.
There you go. Well, Sister Debbie, I got more callers on the line. I don't mean to cut you off, but I got a few more people I want to get to. But I want to thank you for calling in, though. Okay?
My pleasure.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies.
Okay, I'm going back to the phone lines, but before I do, we got about 13 minutes live time, so if you're calling in, now is the time. Again, 424-258-9271 is the number. Press 1. I know you're in the queue. You can come in on tonight's discussion. You have to do it before 9:30 or you will not get in because we may run over, but we will be taping. We will not be live. Also, chat room is open. You have any questions, comments? Feel free to type them in. I'll read them off when I can and try to respond to them. Also, if you do call in, please be aware of background noise, like cats, dogs, whatever, kids, because this is being taped, and we try to have a clear taping. I'm going to go back to the phone lines, and I'm going to bring in a brother out of Queensbridge, New York, and that's Brother Sugar Ray.
Hey, peace, brother. Peace. Good evening.
Peace, man. Good evening. Say peace to Brother Youssef.
Brother Youssef, peace, brother. Peace.
Peace. What's going on, my brother?
All is well. The sister said something, you know, I wanted to just make a quick comment. The sister was speaking not too long ago and spoke about the young man who shot the delivery boy, and she said, you know, how she was shocked that she happened to be sitting with the boy, you know, on the stoop helping him, and couldn't believe that this is the same 17-year-old, this is the same young man who did something so senseless. And we see that a lot in our communities, and we're shocked, like, how could this happen? This is not this person. And, you know, Brother Tony, I want to connect that point right there back to the discussion the other day about genetically modified or genetically altered. You know, has the thinking process of black folks been genetically altered? That is one of the same. Those things are connected. You know, a lot of us in the urban community, in black communities, we are mentally ill without being diagnosed as being mentally ill. You know, we have this effort thought process, right? This I don't give a F, you know, where we're not able to connect our thoughts and our feelings with with what can happen after I do this or after I say this. So we just say things and do things without any thought, any feeling, any emotion, you know what I mean? And all of that is part of the brain, the chemical imbalance of the brain and all of the different chaotic things that's going on inside the body. So now we're raising chaotic children. And the sad reality of what's going on with our young people is that a lot of us adults, without knowing it, you know, but being ignorant, are helping them by giving them certain foods and allowing certain things to go on, you know, as far as certain, you know, types of music and certain types of, you know, shows and games and things like that that really affects a person's mind and affects a person's behavior. And, of course, it's always going to be exceptions to the rule, and it's always going to be one or two or three who, you know, play the same game, listen to the same music, eat the same foods, and you would say there's nothing wrong with. But we see plenty of times, you know, we see the result every day in our community. I just wanted to make a comment on that, you know, and it's a sad reality, but it's a reality that we got to address and start to make the changes. Because when that happens like that, when someone today is, you know, laughing, joking, it seems like there's nothing wrong, and then today they go kill 10 people or kill someone for really nothing at all, you know, no type of reason or anything, there's obviously something wrong with that person's brain. You know, and that person is sick, and it needs to be facilitated, you know, or rehabilitated, I should say, and that doesn't really happen in our prison system here in America. It doesn't happen at all. You know, people go to prison, and they can rehabilitate themselves, and, you know, amongst some groups, but yeah, that's a little bit of my piece.
Okay. Does anybody want to respond to that? You, Brother Yusuf?
No, I'm good.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you, my brother,
yes,
for your comment this evening, and thank you for hanging out with us on the show. And
definitely.
I don't know, Tony, are there more callers in the queue waiting? Tony disappeared. What happened to Tony? That's okay. That's okay. We're here still. And what I wanted to ask you, though, and I did have this question, Brother Yusuf. Basically, on situations with our youth and what's going on down here in the southern region of the United States, with the whole stand your ground thing and brothers like Trayvon and Jordan being killed senselessly. What is your position on that? What are your thoughts? What should we be doing, you know, with regard to staying your ground and other things like this that jeopardize the lives of our young black boys?
I mean, you know, it's American history continuing to repeat itself all the way from the Dred Scott case that no black man had any rights that, you know, in white society that is bound to respect, and it's continuing to play itself out violently in different ways. I mean, fundamentally, we have to begin to exercise our human right to protect ourselves. I mean, I can't say it any other way. I mean, it's common sense. You know, any of us who find ourselves in a position, someone smack you, you're going to smack them back.
Okay.
I mean, that's just not natural instinct. And I think,
okay,
and maybe be clear on what I'm advocating or speaking to is, there's us organizing within our community. I'm not talking about unorganized violence. I'm talking about of self-defense. That's Malcolm said it.
Right.
You know, the Black Panther Party said it. But again, we have a lot of renegade folks that's out here who tend to want to just go out here and talk. But also, we have to begin to position ourselves, you know, exploiting their systems to change policy and hiding the contradiction. Because the unfortunate reality, many of us are mentally afraid. Like, we can't do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if any of you have seen the video of the brother, actually, you know, the Southern State in New Orleans, where the cop comes in his house and he's pleading for his life. Like, why is you trying to arrest me? And then the cop gets going for his handcuffs. The brother, I mean, I felt him. I started to cry. Like, I'm scared. I think you're going to shoot me. I mean, this is happening, you know, continuously, and many more have seen. Just go to YouTube and just Google Brother New Orleans Arrest Black Dude. And it's like 5 minutes, man. And that's part of that psychological terror that continues to go on. So, again, we have to – but also, too, we have to look at ourselves in the sense of the poor decision, the poor behaviors that we're doing, we're making excuse for reckless police coming our community and behave the way they do. We clean that up. Then it's clear and seeing it is what it is. It's racism. But it's hard to call it racism when a guy is out here acting, you know, if I'm out here acting crazy. It may be that, but we allow them to justify it or clean it up and put some sugar on it.
Yeah, yeah. And that happens. And I find that very coming from New York, because I am a native New Yorker. Okay, Tony's New York. I'm New York. I'm down here. I've been in the southern region of the United States for the past 7 years now. Okay, but I would say Atlanta's more progressive. But you got places like when I went to South Carolina, for example, in the mid '90s, late '90s, it seemed like they were still scared of the white man. You know, and there's a lot of places that have that mentality where it's like a situation like a Jordan Davis or Trayvon Martin would not have happened in Harlem. I mean, without Harlem stepping out and handling stuff. I mean, Zimmerman would have been handled. You understand what I'm saying? It would have been already taken care of. So I don't understand the dynamic, but I do. I understand Jim Crow because I understand the history, if you want to say that. I understand Jim Crow. I understand what that did to a lot of people psychologically. But it's hard being a New Yorker understanding, you know, the mentality of, you know, if you can't, if the criminal justice system is not going to handle things, you gotta take it to the street. You got to handle it, you know. So I don't know what they're going to do, you know. But that's my position. Today,
Okay, we're going to take our next caller. Again, if you're listening and you want to call in, you got about 3 minutes before you can. 424-258-9271. If you don't call in now, you won't get in after 9:30. So now is the time to call in. Also, if you have anything to say and you're in the chat room, feel free to type it in, and I'll try to read it over the air. We're going to take our next caller. We're going to the Bronx, New York, and let's welcome Brother Mike X. Good evening, Mike. Can you hear me?
Peace and blessings to everyone on the line.
Peace, man.
Family, you know, our people have been destroyed for the lack of knowledge. You know, our people have been tricked into believing, you know, our young people, pardon my language, they've been tricked into believing that they can be nothing but niggers. You know, the so-called, you know, responsible ones, you know, of us, you know, the adults, a lot of us walk around crying out that we minorities. And between those two extremes, it's like, you know, we've lost the courage to be, you know, who we need to be, you know, whether you call yourself black, whether you call yourself African-American, whether you call yourself an African in America or just a straight-up African, like, you know, we've lost, you know, that type of conviction, you know, to stand up and to be distinctly who we need to be so that we can step into a position and practice of self-determination, you know, of striving to wherever we live at. We should be in control of it or at least have significant say-so, you know. And that comes through, you know, the power to do that comes through a much-needed unity and organization of our people. And, you know, and I think that the main problem is we don't have that consciousness anymore. You know, a lot of us don't harken back to, you know, the days of, you know, Marcus Garvey and Malcolm and, you know, Huey. And, you know, we don't know nothing about that. A lot of us are just going along to get along, you know. And this is, you know, the seedbed for the chaos, you know, that we're talking about, where our young people are out there, you know, striving to meet themselves because they don't have a clue of what life is about, you know. And I feel like, yeah, you know, the adult population, you know, we need to be held responsible. We need to hold ourselves responsible for that. Even if a lot of us, didn't have what these young people didn't have. Like, I didn't have a father in the household, and I didn't have any community leadership. You know, the churches, you know, weren't doing what they were supposed to do, and there was no civic leadership. You know, there was nobody out there to give, you know, my generation what they needed so that we can understand what life is about and we can begin to organize ourselves to be able to, you know, be of benefit to our own lives and to our neighborhoods and to our friends, family, and loved ones. Thank God at that time hip-hop intervened, and I talk about this all the time. You know, hip-hop intervened and, you know, brought us that consciousness in the late 80s, early 90s, and got us in tune with Malcolm X and got us in tune with these people. But it's like here today, we learn, they just, you know, things are done, you know what I mean? And then there's another dark period that we go through, you know what I mean? And it's like, I want to know, like, when are we going to step out into the sun and refuse to ever let the darkness creep back in again? You know what I mean? It's like those of us who are conscious a lot of times, you know, we're surrounded by, you know, apathy, ignorance, you know what I mean, mediocrity. And it's like, you know, we got to challenge our people. I don't believe, I don't believe it's the same family. I got to say that. You know, now if you want to talk about the mental diet, you know what I mean, if you are the type of person that does not have an alternative approach on how you program your own mind to think and to see and to believe and to know, you know, if you're not the type of brother that, you know, is a studious brother, you know, that takes his own time and invests in getting information, you know what I mean, whether it's through books, whether it's through documentaries, YouTube, going to lectures, and, you know, however you do it. For me, it's primarily the books. You know what I mean? I'm a student, you know what I'm saying? I didn't just stop learning when I got my GED, you know what I mean? Learning to me is not about going to college, and if you don't go to college, then you don't learn no more. Learning to me is a responsibility that I take very seriously. So Brother Mike X always got some type of book talking about some type of subject matter that he believes is going to make him the strongest black man, primarily a human being, child of God, that he can be. And we need more of our people to, you know, to take that responsibility, especially because we don't have our own schools. The schools that we send our children to are racist. The curriculums are hopelessly lopsided in favor of pushing Eurocentric values. The TV screen, the television, you know what I mean? We already know what we're getting through that. And, you know, and any media apparatus, you know, whether it be movies, whether it be printed, you know, we don't have and maintain the type of information sharing apparatuses that will help our children, our people to understand what time it is. You know what I mean? And I say it again, thank you for the show. Thank you for this show.
Thank you, Brother Mike. Brother Mike, is there anything in particular that you want to speak to Brother Youssef about, that you want to comment about what you've heard him talk about tonight directly?
Well, I honestly have to say that I wasn't on the line from the very beginning, you know what I mean? And I just heard, you know, I guess for the last 25 minutes I've been on. But I do want to say that the brother is a Facebook friend of mine, and I haven't had any real interaction. I've liked a lot of his stuff that I've seen through Facebook, and I'm trying to remember how I got in contact with
I'm the one who put you in contact. I put you in contact with him.
Okay, and I thank you, sis. And I definitely, admire the brother. You know, I think I probably look a little bit like the brother. I got the full beard. You know what I mean? I don't got the close shaved hair like he has. I'm a boy, brother. But I share a lot of the sentiments that I've seen on the brother's Facebook page. I like his name, Youssef Bunchy Carter. You know, said a lot to me when I heard Youssef Bunchy Carter. You know what I mean? Knowing my experience.
Bunchy Carter.
You know, brother, I just say, you know, keep on pushing, family. it takes to make your acquaintance. A lot of times I don't always comment on people's comment threads, because what happens sometimes, because my Facebook is connected to my phone, you know what I mean? What happens is if I put a comment, now everybody who comments after me is going to keep making my phone go off, and I like to keep my phone on instead of vibrate. So sometimes I'll like something to death. I'll like it to death, you know what I mean? But, you know, it's definitely my pleasure to share this line with you, family. I pray that you receive all of the support and all of the energy, you know, both, you know, fleshly and spiritual, you know, that you can handle to feed into the projects that you're working on, family. And I just pray that by people listening to you tonight and chiming into shows like these, that they step out into the freedom that they have. Let's stop blaming, you know, the messed up situations on the ignorance of our people or the power of the powers that be, you know. Stop waiting for the people to wake up and you step out and be the trailblazer. You know what I mean? If you have that type of consciousness, you step out and be the trailblazer. There ain't nothing stopping you from doing what Brother Yusuf is doing. There ain't nothing stopping you from doing what Sister Ami Met and Brother Tony Mix is doing, and I say humbly, what Brother Mike X is striving to do. Nobody's stopping you but you. If you put more of your focus and your attention on the ignorance and mediocrity of the people, you know what I mean, then you're putting in living a vital, you know what I mean, conscious, aware life in your own right, then you're part of the problem. They waiting on you. You waiting on them, but they waiting on you. You know, I really feel like, you know, the conscious community, like, we need to take more selfless, we need to take more responsibility and just go and just start it. Start it. You know, stop sitting on projects that you haven't even finished yet or put enough energy into, blaming the people for their ignorance, Or making the powers that be into this giant monster, you know, that just got us pinned down to where we can't do nothing, and that's not the truth. So I'm sorry, family. Let me thank you for allowing me to come on the lines and share tonight. And I say peace and blessings to everyone on this line. And I wish more life for every single person on this line. As long as we're alive, this is our moment. You know what I mean? Don't waste your moment by focusing on something that you can't really control. You can control your life. You can step up and live a vital and conscious and aware life. And and that's what our people need to see, family. They need to see us, you know, stepping out, you know, and taking that lead. And I believe that they'll follow, you know what I mean, if we do it in the right fashion, you know. So thank you.
Thank you, Brother Mike.
Brother Mike,
thank you so much.
Thank you, man. Mm-hmm. You know, it wouldn't be no show without you, brother. Believe that, man. You know, that's just my personal, you know, thing, you know, because it's a blessing to have you with us, man, you know. And when you come on and you deliver every time, man, you deliver every time. You haven't skipped a beat. Nothing has changed, you know, and I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful to have you with us, man. Believe that, man. Believe that, you know.
If you will, can I have 5 seconds, bro? Yo, family, get into those books, man. Get into the books, man. You know, if you haven't read the autobiography of Malcolm, man, there's no way that you can understand what's being done to us as a people. You know, Brother Malcolm was one of those types of kids that we were talking about. You know, he fell through the cracks. His family was destroyed. You know, he ended up on the street. He went into the prison, you know what I mean? And there he found a light. He found truth. And then he started to, you know, he became a student. You know what I mean? And he became one of our greatest beacons and lights of hope. You know, and there's a lot of other books. Carter G. Woodson, Miseducation of the Negro. You know, Marcus Garvey, Philosophies and Opinions, Dr. Amos Wilson, Blueprint for Black Power. Like, I could go on and on. But, family, ain't nobody stopping you from reading, from studying. If you want to know how to become an asset to yourself and to our people, man, get into those books. Learn about these people who went before you that strive to help us, man.
That our people need to read more. That's the conclusion.
Most definitely.
Okay, I got you.
We're going to take a short break. And I'm going to come back. I'm going to get final comments. And then we're going to close for the evening. So stand by. Don't go nowhere. You're listening to EIE SOC Radio. We'll be right back right after this.
All the ghettos around the world. Big this. Get the bubble of Joe. Shut
all
it.
The children say. There's a world out there that I wanna see. There's a man that I'm destined to be. I won't be stopped by the ghetto street. I believe inside that I can't be beat. This life could be a ball and chain if you let yourself get caught in the game. I had some friends who drugs for dough, but I don't intend to go down that road. One day I'm gonna change the world, make a better place for every boy and girl. Everyone in need, homeless families, have a place to sleep and food to eat. I'll take every gun off the street so another tear won't be shed in grief. And every thug in every hood, I will make them change from bad to good.
SOC Radio. I'm your host, Tony Nix. Tonight, we've been talking about mentoring our youth and preventing crime and incarceration. Our guest speaker tonight is Brother Yusef Bunchy Shapur. We're going to get final comments, and we're going to close the show for the evening. I'm going to go to the phone lines, and I'm going to start off with Brother Sugar Ray. Then, Brother, can you hear me? Brother Sugar Ray, are you there? Okay, perhaps he can't hear me. His
yes,
mic
I am.
Is open. Oh, okay,
no,
there you
yeah,
go.
Yeah.
Final comments.
I don't have no comment, brother. Just keep doing what you're doing. You know, the passion from Brother Mike X is what's needed. You know, we in a good space, though, right? We in a good space. I know we tend to focus on, you know, the negative and what's not right, what's not exact, you know, what shouldn't be. But we in a good space, man. You know, here in the urban communities, man, I've been doing some traveling. And, you know, brothers coming together, sisters is building. We in a good space. Let's just build on this energy. You know, some good things happening in the universe. Let's move forward, you know. Let's always strive to be more effective. But, you know, Tony, keep up the good work. You know, Sister Amunet, you're so inspiring. Keep it up.
Thank
you. Guys, just keep doing what you're doing, man. I'm here to support, and I look forward to Tony sitting down with you sometime soon and doing some building, brother.
Tell us about your efforts with the nutrition piece, Sugar Ray. Just give us, you know, something brief. Let folks know what you're doing.
Wow, that's a lot, man.
I don't mean to put you on the spot.
I mean, so ultimately, I believe wholeheartedly that a key to solving a lot of our problems lies in community gardening. You know, lies in community gardening for a number of reasons. Definitely, you know, to raise healthier children. You know, our children are sicker than ever now. You know, I see little 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds drinking 16-ounce Fantas and eating Big Macs and stuff like this in the morning and late at night. And it's terrible. You know, Capri Suns flooded and, you know, these fruit snacks, all these different foods that sound good, man. But so community gardening is where I believe we can do some great work at. We can build economically, you know, as we garden and as we farm and as we trade, you know, city to city, state to state, borough to borough, nation to nation, you know, the community gardening for me is also a way to communicate with our ancestors, you know, to be at one with the land and to remember our ancestors who for so many years, you know, in the last few hundred years have died on those fields, you know, but also they brought life through those fields years before that. So gardening is my thing, you know, agriculture, I believe we got to get back to that, you know, back to that part of our existence, that part of our culture. But, yeah, you know, it's a lot, brother. I want to sit with you whenever you have some time, and let's build.
Oh, for real. For real, we're going to do that, man, because, you know, you're talking about empowerment, man, and nutrition, man, and that's real, real important. Real important. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Peace. Brother Mike X, last final comments.
Peace and blessings. I want to say, you know, to, you know, Brother Sugar Ray, wasn't trying to shoot you down, and particularly I'm glad that Brother Tony asked you that question because gardening and learning how to grow our own foods. I do believe, you know, that we are being poisoned most definitely, you know, by the American, food system. You know, we definitely being poisoned, you know, as far as the processed foods, the chemicals and things of that nature that they put into the foods is definitely an issue. You know what I mean? And if you look at the overall health in the black community, it's something that, you know, is scary. You know what I mean? And I am of one, you know, in my own life, you know, who am striving to wean myself off of a lot of the things, you know, that they put in our areas, you know, to consume, you know what I mean, that I feel is wreaking havoc amongst us. So, brother, I definitely am in unity with you on the need for that. So I just wanted to make that clear. And my, you know, I am very passionate. I think a lot of us are, you know what I mean? And I just want to see our people rise, and I want to see our people take the responsibility of us coming together to save ourselves because, you know, with, you know, of course, you know, in the name of an almighty God that I feel believes, you know, that wants to see us rise. You know what I mean? So I feel like there's things that we have to do for ourselves and for each other. And part of that, you know, is, you know, reconnecting ourselves to our cultural legacy, you know, a knowledge of ourselves, the knowledge of what has been done to knock us down to the level that we are on, which will make us know that we got to, you know, we can't depend upon, you know, the descendants of the people who put us in this position to turn around and undo what their ancestors did to us. You know what I mean? So, you know, we have a responsibility to ourselves and to our neighborhood and to our friends, neighbors and loved ones that we have to get on the job. But if we don't know the history and we don't have a conscious, a historical, you know, understanding, you know, of what brought this about, then we're going to be hard-pressed to do what we need to do in these days and times, you know. So that's all I'm saying, family. And I just want to say thank you to everyone. You know, I hope that I did not offend anyone, you know, with what I said and how I said it. And, you know, I'm going to continue to strive to support your show, Brother Tony and Sister Omni-Net, because I feel that it's much needed, you know what I mean, to give a counterbalance to all of the nonsense that we get through the radio waves, that we get through cable television and in the movies and in the school systems. Having a show like Enough is Enough, Save Our Children, access to it to where we can talk about things of this nature is a blessing, you know what I mean? So thank you, you know, for doing what y'all do. And on peace and blessings to the brother, Yusef Bunchy, you know, brother, keep on striving. I'm going to continue even more so to follow you and your efforts. And, you know, I wish you all the best, family. And Brother Sugar Ray, man, I think it's wonderful what you're doing. And I want to learn, too. So when you and Tony build, man, please include me. I'd like to build, too, because I know if the food system, you know, is as dirty and corrupt as it is, if it faulted, I wouldn't know what to do, bro. I have no green thumb, man. So I'd like to learn myself, family.
All right. That's all right. That's all right, man. I like that. You know, Brother Yusef, final comments.
The floor is yours. Please summarize and tell us what's up and coming for you in the near future, all the up and coming things that are happening. Go ahead, please.
I mean, I just put it in perspective, man, that we are at war, and we need each and every one of us to play our part, from cooking to growing to reading to studying. And I think we need to get out of this either-or type of situation. We need to get out of this grandstanding. The flawed theories lead to flawed practices. And also, you have to understand that, you know, our leaders were assassinated. They was killed by COINTELPRO. So we're in a state of rebuilding. But also, we have to stop allowing folks to, or giving folks credit of being leaders who are not qualified. Some folks may be spokespersons, but they're not leaders. And we need to start developing and training people and upping the ante, upping the expectation within our community. And I get a lot of Lord Roddy and Felicity and all that. But my focus is about change. My focus is about making a difference in my community. I never get on anybody else's TV or radio show. I'm fine with that. If I can save some lives, if I can revolutionize some minds, that's what this is about. And we have to stop allowing each and every one of us to be on different islands as if we're fighting different fights. It's one fight. It may be different strategies. It may be different tactics and organizations, but it's one fight. And so, no, that's one of the things I really want to emphasize. And we have to start supporting each other. You know, we can talk about the white and all that, but white folks support us. Well, we won't support each other. And we have to address the internal contradiction. If we want to be self-determining and all those good things. And stop blaming youth. We label them as at risk, but they at risk because they're surviving in at-risk communities. And we're all at risk because we live in a white supremacist society that we're subjected to black inferiority. So, yeah, man, we all play a role in this. You know, some days I can be a leader, other days I can be a follower. Some days I'm sweeping the floor. And so that's the mindset that we have to have. We have to be flexible. I appreciate you guys for having you on, and thank you.
Man, we appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming. We are so honored to have you grace us with your presence even on this evening. And it's been wonderful. And I just want to say, there's a lot of people think they're activists as well. And you're not an activist unless you have some action. I just want to say that. We can talk. We can strategize. We can analyze. But what are you executing? And until you're doing that, you're not an activist. You got ideas. You need to execute them. So we must be activists. We must take action, and we must be active. And we must execute our ideas, thoughts, so they become actions, so they can create change and be effective in society. And that's my final word.
And a good
and you
final
said,
word.
You said Wendy Sikora is all of those things. He is an activist. For real. For real.
Thank you.
For real. You're welcome.
That's my co-host, ladies and gentlemen, Sister Amunette. You know, y'all got all these different names. You know, I was telling Sister Amunette earlier, I'm thinking about maybe changing my name, you know. I think that'll come later. I told her the name I was going to use, but I know what it's going to draw. And I ain't going to be ready for all that, you know.
No.
But this has been beautiful.
Yes,
Brother Youssef, he's going off the line. He's off the line now, but it was a blessing to have him on tonight along with all of the callers tonight who shared our time. I want to thank Brother Sugar Ray for calling in. And yes, Sugar Ray, yeah, okay, we're going to get together real soon, sit down, and possibly make some things happen. Weather's opening up, so this is the time to do some things. Mike X, as always, man, you know, we love you here. We were still waiting for you to do your show, okay? Even if it's just one show, it's your show. Let me know when you're ready, because I got you. You know, that's an open invitation. And Sister Amunette, you know, what could I tell you? You know, sis, I've come to admire you a hell of a lot. You know, you're a lot younger than me. You know, you're like that radical little sister. You know what I mean? But
aww.
But she's not out of control. She's got a mind. She can think. You know. And I got, you know, big respect for you and what you do and what you represent, you know. I know a lot of folks can't figure you out, and that's too bad, you know what I mean? Because you're really not that complicated if a person would stop wanting you to be what they want you to be and accept you as who you are. You know, and they, let me tell you, once they find out who they are, they'll love you just like I do, bottom line. But again,
aww,
tonight was great. You know, folks, everyone said it. You know, we got to be in it. We got to lead by example. I'm a believer. We cannot depend on one leader. Yes, we should hold our community leaders responsible. Yes, I believe in that. We have to make them responsible and accountable for our needs in the community and to address the ills of our community. But as a people, we got to get out there and make some things happen. And one of the first things we got to do is stop believing the naysayers that it is no hope. That's a lie. This is about doing something different. It's about change. It's about choices. It's about commitment. Easy stuff, y'all. This is easy stuff. If you reach one person, it's a success. Believe it or not. Our kids need help. And we're in the business of helping them. You know, everybody don't have the same skill, but if you've managed to stay alive and stay out of prison and be a productive member of society, take care of your family, be a good father, or be that single mother, you have something to give, believe it or not. because folks want to know how you did it. Them youngsters on the block need to know how you did it, coming from where they came from, come from rather. So, you know what, give a little bit back. It's okay, because God will bless you for it. Listen, you've been listening to EIESOC Radio. I'm your host, Tony Nix, along with my co-host, Sister Omnianette. We're going to see you Sunday, 8 p.m., right here on EIESOC Radio. Don't know what we're coming with this Sunday, but get ready because we know we keep it real and we keep it funky. So if you ain't ready for us, then I suggest you don't tune in because we're not sugarcoating it. We're giving it just the way it is, just the way it is. So it's time to get busy, y'all, because the sooner we have no violence, the sooner we will know peace. That's KNOW Deuces. If no one told you they loved you today, God does, and so do I. Everyone have a blessed night.
Hey.